Welcome to the Fight White Genocide Podcast with Laura, Ken, and Jeff, where we talk about whatever we think is important in the global struggle against white genocide. This is podcast number 18, recorded May 8th, 2023. Today's subject is free speech and censorship. How are you doing, Laura?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm very good. And how are you doing, Ken?
I'm doing good.
Laura has an addition to the family, right?
We do, yes, and a new baby boy.
Okay, which we were hoping would be, you know, our savior and our star child and our John Connor, whatever.
Well, can't put so much pressure on him just yet, but he will be raised pro-white, that's for sure.
All right. If we look at the situation we're in, leftists don't have a monopoly on information dissemination anymore. So they're cracking down on speech. They're always against free speech because that's how they control populations. That's how they exercise power, is they control public opinion with their terms, talking points, and narratives. But with the internet now, we see their power waning because they don't control the internet completely. Other voices can put out their information. Mm-hmm. So people are getting alternative viewpoints, and they have since about 1995. So that's 28 years ago. So we've had, a generation and a half now exposed to alternative viewpoints, alternative worldview, alternative information, and I think we're starting to see it having an effect here. America was founded as a white nation, and we adopted free speech, but I say that proves that we're a white nation because you can't have free speech unless your nation is founded on anything but race. If it's founded on any set of words, then you can't allow any serious questioning of those words.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple on that topic, which is that a nation that's based upon an idea, everybody has to conform to that idea. And any different idea is treason.
Right.
And must be censored.
And we're seeing that play out today. They're, that's what hate speech is. It's, mm-hmm. it's heresy to political correctness.
Yeah, and it goes to the point as well that diversity and free speech are not compatible. They're just simply not compatible for that reason. You can have diversity of people, or you can have diversity of opinions. You can't have both. Mm-hmm. And that might be hard for people to digest when it's said that way, but that is the truth. If your nation is based upon an idea, any different ideas, hate speech and treason, you know, you can have loyalty to an idea or loyalty to a people. You can't have both.
No.
Right. Now, this concept of rule by propaganda is hard for a lot of people on our side to grasp. But I say that we are, in fact, ruled by propaganda. And the reason for this, if we look through history, most of the time, people have been ruled by force. Somebody puts an army together, defeats the enemy army, plants their flag, they take over. Force and threat of force is how they exercise power. Now, of course, they try to be just because that makes people, you know, easier to rule over. Ultimately, their power comes from force. But what we're ruled by today is propagandists, because they control public opinion by putting out their propaganda. And the reason they're able to do that is because of mass media technology. That's what is different. They couldn't do that before because we didn't have printing press, we didn't have television, we didn't have radio, but we have all those things now. So the leftists can formulate their talking points, hone them down, and then repeat them over and over, unlimited amounts to millions and millions of people. And they do this over and over, and they control populations. They tell people how to vote. Democracy, I call democracy the system where the group that controls public opinion and tells people how to vote and how to think is the oligarchy that's in power. It's not ruled by the people. It's ruled by the mind controllers, really, ultimately. And if you don't get that, you know, you're not going to get anywhere politically if you don't accept that. If you're in a kinetic war and say, well, I don't like gunpowder, well, too bad, you're not going to win. Mm-hmm. Unless you use gunpowder, and we're in a political battle now. We're in a propaganda war, and well, you're not going to win unless you use propaganda.
Yeah, and just as another point to that, which something that's just as important to them as propaganda is censoring the other side, making sure the other side is never heard. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's important that we start formulating our own propaganda that is short and sweet, because when we do have the ability to make our point, we get a very short amount of time to do that. And our points have to be quick, concise, and have a moral high ground, and also a factual high ground. That's the whole message that we have, is that we need to all get on a simple message about white genocide and pro-white advocacy, and push these memes and these slogans out there. We're not going to get a lot of time to say things. So we have to make it as powerful and quick as possible.
Yeah, truth is a force multiplier. Now, our enemies were able to lie because they didn't have any effective opposition. And they controlled all the avenues of information dissemination. But now they're not getting away with it anymore because they don't control the internet. And we have enough people that understand this, that understand it's propaganda war, and are refuting, are discrediting them by pointing out that they are lying.
Countering their terminology, countering their, you know, their propaganda with our own, and exposing, as you say, discrediting them as being, you know, straight up anti-white. That's all that they always are.
Yeah. And people are noticing the fake opposition too, that's set up to make sure that we never have that our side is not heard, or rather putting up some kind of nerf soft opposition that isn't a real opposition. And people are starting to notice that as well when it comes to talk radio, right wing talk radio and Fox News, that they're not really putting up any real opposition. GOP is definitely not. They're going silent on these things. Anti-whites will be in front of congressional hearings saying the most vile lies imaginable about pro-whites, and nobody on the GOP is defending white people. None of them. They just let it go on. If anything, they join in with the left to help them demonize white people.
Yeah.
Yeah, the GOP is being exposed as fake opposition. They're not real opposition. So, you know, they're losing support, and we're gaining support, at least hopefully. I think we've already got most of the smart, rational people that have examined this, and you know, they at first they opposed it, but eventually, you know, if they're dedicated to truth, they have to admit we're right, you know, and they're coming around. But we're in this period now where they're not really open about it. They're not really saying much, but it's there. They agree with us. But they're still afraid to talk, you know, with some exceptions. Mm-hmm. Now, what'll happen when they're not afraid anymore? Well, that's what we're hoping for. That's what we're waiting for.
Yeah, I mean, we're slowly starting to see some people out there that are pushing out our kind of talking points. Mark Dice is one of them, who's talking about anti-whitism and things like that. Another guy named Stu Peters. These are pretty popular people within the right wing, and you're starting to see our kind of narratives seep into mainstream right wing talking points, you know, more so than ever.
Yeah, we've been repeating these things for 10 years, and at first they ignore it, or they laugh at it, or they try to argue about it, but we just keep repeating it. You know, we're right, everything we say is true, and eventually, you know, it's in their head. They can't get it out, and they observe reality. It confirms what we've been saying. So eventually they just flip at some point, and they start. They just, even if they're not consciously aware of it, they start repeating our stuff because they can't help it.
And it's strange, like the memes that we made 10 years ago, how relevant they are today.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so we don't have to change our talking points. We haven't had to. Maybe at some time we're going to have to do a major shift on our talking points. But right now, everything we're saying that we said 10 years ago is as true today as it was then. And we're going to keep on repeating it until it becomes untrue. Mm-hmm. That simple.
It'll become untrue when they stop the war on white people, I guess.
Yeah.
When
I'm looking forward to being wrong. I mean,
show me a non-white country that needs diversity, okay?
Mm. Or show me a white country that is allowed to remain white. You know, once you know they stop white genocide or stop forcing diversity on anywhere that's too white, then you know we may be in the clear. But at this point in time, the attack on white people is ongoing, and we need to use that freedom of speech that we are granted here in America. And I mean, every other country, every other white country in the world is a thought policed country, and we better use it or lose it here in America. Even though it's, you know, they are trying their hardest to censor us and not restrict our reach on getting these basic truths out.
Yeah, I mean, we see a whole lot of support for free speech. The next step is for people to start using it. I mean, just because you're talking and saying something political does not really mean you're exercising free speech.
Well, you have to... use effective free speech, and I call that you discredit the enemy's terms, talking points, and narratives, and then you impose your own terms, talking points, and narratives. You're trying to instill a different worldview in mass consciousness, really. You're really trying to rewire people's brains. And if you just saying something that's true, it doesn't necessarily do that. Like, okay, Jews run Hollywood, so what? That doesn't hurt Jewish power because it doesn't discredit any of the terms, talking points, and narratives they use to take power and keep power and increase their power.
Exactly. I mean, we are discrediting the narratives that they are constantly pushing on us by promoting white mixing in everything that they do, and pointing that they aren't attacking any other race except the white race.
One of the things they're trying to do is discredit anonymity. Now, of course, we're not in power, and if we're doxxed, if we're outed, then we can be subject to harassment. We can be subject to even, you know, a knock from the FBI, you know, getting all our social media deplatformed, getting, you know, some people even lost bank accounts. I know in Europe they have. So doxing.
We lost our PayPal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We lost every single payment.
Every platform, yeah.
Yeah. Every single one that we tried. PayPal got rid of this.
Square, all of them. Yeah, PayPal. I mean, they've banned all our accounts, so.
Yeah, for merely objecting to genocide. Imagine any other anti-genocide group getting, you know, having their methods of receiving donations just totally removed.
Mm.
I mean, more evidence that it's genocide.
Is intentional.
But if you're in power, or if you're siding with the existing power structure, you don't have to be anonymous. There's no benefit. But if you're not, well, only reason to demand somebody not be anonymous is to make them, is to sick the Antifa on them.
Yeah, to try to hurt them in some way. Because you want to damage that person as an individual, not what they're saying, but that individual who said it.
Yeah, it doesn't refute any of their claims. Now, Jordan Peterson, that keeps talking about this subject, he says that anonymity makes people mean or something. Well, maybe you're mean anyway. I don't know.
I'll hear that on Twitter. People are like, why don't you got a picture and a real name up? I'm like, okay, I'll tell you what. If you can get me on CNN, I will happily go on there with a huge smile on my face, using my real name, and tell the whole world about white genocide. I, you know, But until then, I mean, all I'm doing is setting myself up for some crazy anti-white to try to kill me or do something terrible to my family, or, you know. So, yeah, anonymity is needed right now. As of right now, hopefully it won't be at one time. We can start discussing our continuing the existence of white people without being under threat. And again, that's even more evidence that it's genocide, that we are actually being harassed, slandered, demonized, threatened for merely objecting to an obvious program of genocide. Yeah, it's like in the Soviet Union. Like, what happened to those people that would speak out against the Soviet communist agenda?
Yeah, openly with their real name. Yeah, it's like saying, you know,
that's why they had Samizdat, right? They had to do everything anonymous.
But of course, as we all know, as the three of us know, the Soviet Constitution guaranteed freedom of speech. It guaranteed it to everyone. You're free to say whatever you want. And we're under the same system of quote-unquote freedom of speech here.
We can say anything that doesn't offend political correctness. Yep.
Yeah, I was listening to Mark Levin the other day. For those who don't know, that's a talk show host. He's got a Fox show. And he was saying, America is the only country with free speech in our Constitution. I'm like, I don't think so. I'm pretty sure almost all of them do nowadays. Pretty much all of them do. Doesn't mean you're guaranteed. Just because it's written in the Constitution does not mean it's guaranteed. Soviet Union had it in their Constitution. Guaranteed. Guaranteed freedom of speech in the Soviet Union. But we all know that was a joke. And right now, in the current system in the West, any notion that we're guaranteed freedom of speech is nonsense. That's not true.
Yeah, well, that's it. So saying, you know, freedom of speech with exceptions is tyranny. You know, that's exactly what we're living under, right? Yep. Here now, they're trying to suppress the discussion on a public issue as important as genocide is tyranny.
We've seen revelations that Twitter was working with, with the government or the FBI or something. And they were just, the government was telling them who to shut down, 250,000 accounts. So how is that not a First Amendment violation? Any pressure from the government to censor speech, how is that not a First Amendment violation?
Yeah.
I suppose if they're just doing it voluntarily, but how could it ever be really totally voluntarily? And no one is more censored than us, which tells me we're their biggest threat. You know, all these people that aren't censored, you can talk about Christianity, you can talk about who has ever deplatformed just for criticizing capitalism? Anybody?
Yeah.
They say the capitalists have all these power or it's all about money. Well, then why can you lie and slander every business out there and you never get any bad consequences, any repercussions, any deplatforming? Has anyone ever had their PayPal shut down for criticizing capitalism? So all these people that say, well, to see who rules over you, just see who you're not allowed to criticize. Well, you're not allowed to criticize
diversity,
political correctness.
Yeah. Diversity and political correctness. You can't criticize it. You can criticize white people to the moon all you want.
Yeah.
So this idea that there's some kind of white supremacist system is absurd. We are, you know, it's pretty much legislated that you could say whatever you want about whites.
Yeah.
Anything.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. They call straight up for our genocide.
Yeah.
There are plenty of accounts I've seen that are anti-white and calling for white genocide, but they never get banned.
Yeah. It's such a common phenomenon for them to call for white genocide and call for mass killing of white people that there are actually Twitter accounts that spend all day long posting this stuff. From anti-whites that are saying it on Twitter. I think there's like three accounts that do that. Anti-White Watch, and there's another one.
A lot of white people look at them as, they don't look at them as fully human, so they don't blame them.
Yeah, they just think they're not culpable for their words or actions.
It's another form of, they have their own form of white superiority.
Yeah, it's an extreme form. I mean, how much more extreme of a white supremacist can you be than to have the belief that non-whites are not human enough to be held accountable for their actions and words?
Yeah. I could never dream of being that supremacist. I say the problem is white demoralization. The solution is to reverse white demoralization with counter-propaganda. Now, for us to be able to do that, we have to have free speech to do that. So that's one reason free speech is important. Mm-hmm. Propaganda works. We are ruled by propaganda today. Democracy is the system where the group that controls public opinion with propaganda is the oligarchy in charge. The people will never rule. Free speech is an outlet. Free speech is helps create a harmonious society, because if you're not allowed to speak, the only alternative to speech is violence. So you don't solve anything. You just bottle it up. It just comes out in other forms.
And that's been said by all kinds of people, from Gandhi to JFK. They all have some kind of quote about how when you suppress free speech, that can lead to violence. Because when people feel they have no other outlet, that they can't even talk about a subject, then what other recourse are you giving them?
Yeah, John Kennedy said, when you make peaceful revolution impossible, you make violent revolution inevitable. Can you mention how Elon Musk uses exactly the same terms as the ADL?
Yeah, so back in 2019, 2020, I think Sacha Baron Cohen, who's a comedian out of England, was speaking at the ADL and at some kind of ADL convention, and he said the phrase that freedom of speech does not mean freedom of reach. The ADL has pretty much made that their slogan since 2019. Freedom of speech is not freedom of reach. And for some reason, Elon has adopted that exact slogan as the 2022 Twitter quote unquote free speech policy.
What's the difference between that and shadow banning? I don't.
Yeah. I mean, in order to do that, to suppress reach. Yeah. You have to suppress reach. You have to shadow ban. I mean, there's really no other way around it. So Elon said he's going to end shadow banning, but now he's saying that, you know, that's shadow banning's part of the policy. So Elon's kind of changed his tune on free speech, while at the same time acting like he hasn't changed it at all.
That's it. Claiming that he's an advocate for freedom of speech, but yet shadow banning is the most insidious part of it, of censorship, because you think that you have a voice and they're limiting and hiding anything that you have to say. Yeah. Just for, you know, for an opposing view or something that they don't agree with.
Yeah. Yep.
And if they want to charge people to get more reach, that's fine. But as long as they don't use some political criteria for deciding whether we can have that reach, if they reduce people's reach based on their political opinion, then that's censorship.
Yeah, and when you're adopting the slogan, the mass suppression slogan of a far left anti-white group, obviously it's going to be political. I mean, that's who the ADL is. They're a far left anti-white group. The whole speech, because I put a video out on Twitter where he's talking about it's all about censoring white nationalists, essentially. And what that means is anyone who doesn't hate white people, that's how they're going to apply it. And that's the way Elon is applying it. Like, everything I put on Twitter now is shadow banned. It goes directly into this category that's hidden from normal posts, and it's considered hate speech. It doesn't matter what I say. It's in that category. I'm on some kind of list for permanent shadow banning.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not even told why. I'm not told what I can do to correct that.
So you're judged on the color of your skin, not the content of your posts, huh?
That's right.
Yeah.
I have a past history of not hating white people, and that's unacceptable. because of that past history, everything that I post from that point forward is now shadow banned. Now, it appears to me when I go to somebody's comments and I type my post in, it looks like my comment is showing up just like everybody else's. But in reality, it's not. Mine is under some kind of filter.
Yes, sensitive content or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hate speech, a hate speech thing. It doesn't matter what I say either. I can say the nicest thing in the world to somebody. It'll still be under a hate speech, a hate speech filter.
Yeah.
But my take is he didn't pay $44 billion for no reason. He didn't pay $44 billion just to keep everything the same. So he was planning to change something, even if it was, even if he was going to keep censoring people like us.
Whatever he bought, purchased it for, because his talk was that it's all about freedom of speech. Mm. That was his whole thing. When he was buying Twitter and talking about buying it, it was all about free speech. Mm. But since he's purchased it, there's been nothing working positive in the way of free speech.
He released all those Twitter files, and it is seemingly going after the fact that censorship was engaged in by the government via Twitter, but it seems now that he's just doing the same thing as what was done before.
Which, I mean, my high octane speculation here is, did Elon Musk actually buy Twitter? Did he have some secret help? I'm not going to go into conspiracies about that, but
The question still stands, though. What, somebody bought it for a reason.
Yeah, somebody bought it for a reason.
They didn't buy it just to keep it the same as it was. No, they were getting about $1 billion a year from somebody to just to fund them, just to keep it running. If you look at their financials, it's somebody, they were given these convertible notes or something. The last one was convertible at some ridiculous price that would probably never be reached. So it didn't really have, and it was, I think it was zero interest. So it didn't have any value at all. It didn't have any return at all. So clearly somebody, you know, was just funding them to keep that thing going.
Really?
To maintain, not to make money, but just to keep, you know, keep the people like us censored.
Mm. That's what I was going to say. Maybe it was the illusion, to keep the illusion going, or that this illusion that we have freedom of speech, you know, or that comes out saying that's why he's purchased it, because he's going to, you know, have it as the free speech platform, but just doesn't actually make it a free speech platform. But their fear is that we're going to take it over, right? If they truly allowed freedom of speech, they know that we would end up taking it over, taking the platform over, exposing the religion of political correctness and the anti-white system.
I'm pretty sure that they know that the truth would prevail on a platform like Twitter, and that their scams and frauds would pretty much get laughed away.
Maybe they think they can keep the system going just by tweaking it a little bit, or just allowing a little more free speech.
Yeah.
Or curving back a little bit of the insanity of leftists going off the rails.
Yeah. This could all be a safety valve, but I mean, eventually that will, you know, the illusion that there is free speech on Twitter, if it remains the same, if he doesn't change anything, then people are going to catch on, and they're going to have to find something else. They're going to have to find a new illusion to try to push on the public, and that they are somehow being allowed to speak when they're not.
Yeah.
Donald Trump came out with a proposal to reinstitute free speech that looks pretty good on paper. He said he's going to sign an executive order banning any federal department or agency from colluding with any organization, business, or person to censor, limit, categorize, or impede the lawful speech of American citizens. He said he was going to ban federal money from being used to label domestic speech as mis- or disinformation. He begin the process of identifying and firing every federal bureaucrat who has engaged in domestic censorship. Order the Department of Justice to investigate all parties involved in the new online censorship regime, which is absolutely destructive and terrible, and to aggressively prosecute any and all crimes identified. Ask Congress to send a bill to my desk revising Section 230 to get big online platforms out of censorship business. Stop funding all nonprofits and academic programs that support this authoritarian censorship project. Enact new laws laying out clear criminal penalties for federal bureaucrats who partner with private entities to do an end around the Constitution and deprive Americans of their First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendment rights, and pass a digital Bill of Rights. Sounds pretty good on paper.
Yeah, sounds good. But why didn't he do that before when he was president?
Yeah.
I mean, he was, you know, did that in 2016, said all kinds of great things, gets into office, and none of it really was pushed forward. So, yeah, sounds good, but I'm not betting on it. You know what I mean?
That's it. Yeah, it won't hold my breath. Yeah. They all these politicians seem to do that, right? They all, you know, say what the people want to hear. But as soon as they get into power, they don't do anything. They don't follow through.
Yeah, I mean, but another point to that is, you know, being in office doesn't mean being in power, as Jeff has said.
That's why we're doing with our messaging, consistent messages to gain that mass consensus on basic truths. And that's where our power comes from. That's where our power
comes. Now, the Section 230 gives immunity to internet platforms from the content put out by their users. However, it's said that wasn't intended to that shouldn't apply to an entity that, you know, edits their content. Is now they are the content provider now. And I think what he's saying here is he's going to only apply Section 230 immunity to social media platforms that don't engage in, you know, editing or censorship. If you do, then okay, now you're subject to lawsuit for what you put out. Section 230, it is the Communications Decency Act of 1996. Section 230, no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. So if they're not the publisher, then I guess they can't be sued, is the idea. But you see how what's going on here overall is, you know, the government is outsourcing civil rights violations to private entities.
How do you mean?
Well, the private company is doing it, not the government. If the government did what these social media companies were doing, it would be a First Amendment violation. They were doing it directly.
But I mean, in essence, that to Section 230 is correct, right? These platforms shouldn't be held accountable for what people are posting on their platforms. They're not the ones, you know.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. But in that same respect, why do they get immunity when they are also censoring opinions? You know, they can't have it both ways.
So we see, you know, they're fighting back. Ireland passed a censorship law, and Florida passed a censorship law too, where you can't criticize Jews. Or
he went to Florida to Israel to sign a Floridian law.
Isn't that insane? Isn't that insane? Goes to a foreign country to sign in hate speech laws.
Yeah, for censorship law.
So, you know, they're fighting back, or they're trying to fight back, but, you know, we've forced them to show that they're against free speech. And they're also demanding we say things, demanding somebody give somebody an honorific or a pronoun or something, say a certain thing. That's just as much a violation of free speech, too. Punishing you for not saying something is just as much a free speech violation as punishing you for saying something.
Yeah, I've never even thought of it that way, but that's exactly what it is. And that's kind of a bizarre thing to be pushing onto the public.
But that's how they get their power, from controlling public opinion, controlling speech, controlling thought, ultimately.
And suppressing thought.
So what about, we look at their excuses for censorship. They're saying that if we see election count shenanigans and we question them, that's an attack on democracy. Really, how about rigging the election? That seems to be more of an attack on democracy than questioning election counts. And you say, oh, what about incitement? Now, incitement, anything could be incitement, though. Anything could cause somebody to get mad. Any criticism or it's a meaningless excuse.
Well, I mean, according to Hillary Clinton, back when the BLM protester assassinated several police officers in Dallas, she said that basically the public has been inciting this by not discussing BLM topics enough, or taking into consideration what BLM is saying, and that the violence that comes about out of it should be a call for everybody to start listening to them. But when a person might, you know, go off the rails and do something in the name of white genocide, well, that's a reason to censor. Yeah. When the left commit their violence, that's a reason to start listening to them. But when the right wing do it, it's a reason to censor. Very strange.
The main way to fight this is with counter-propaganda, and we've come up with a number of tools for that. Bob Whitaker said that censorship is violence. You're forcibly stopping people from saying something. The only alternative to speech is violence. Anyone who wants censorship wants violence. So they say that speech causes violence. Well, we say censorship causes violence inevitably. Mm-hmm. So you can at least neutralize them there. Also, they've been coming out with this free, fair election. Every time a leftist wins, they say, oh, yep, it was all free and fair, and don't you dare question it. Mm-hmm. But I point out, you know, if there was any censorship or any restrictions on free speech before the election, how could you possibly have a free election if you weren't even allowed to discuss the issues? No free speech, no free election.
Yep.
There's my talking point. There's the short version of it anyway. You can't have a free election if you didn't have free speech before the election. No free speech, no free election, and it doesn't matter who is doing the censoring.
And how can you have a fair election when you've been receiving massive amounts of misinformation? Mm. Like when the public is not allowed to form a rational point of view because they're misinformed.
Or you're not allowed to refute that information, yeah.
Right. I mean, that's kind of what they're saying about the revelations, and I hate to go into this topic, but about Biden's laptop is that 14% of the U.S. population said that they would have changed their vote had they known what they know now about Biden's laptop, and that the attorney general deliberately fabricated a Russia hoax to explain away the Biden laptop. So that people would not, so it would give them reason to continue censoring that topic.
Mm.
And that in itself is election interference, and he should be on trial for that.
Yeah, all this censorship is, you could call election interference, really.
Mm. Yeah, it is. All of it is. The narrative on white interracial crime, like what Elon was tweeting about the other day. This misinformation pretty much makes elections, it sways elections, how people feel about certain topics,
mm-hmm.
and it's election interference to the fullest.
Yeah. One thing I've been floating is this talking point. Businesses cannot collude to fix prices or wages, but they can collude to fix public discourse. In other words, in the early, you know, 20th century, late 19th, early 20th century, we came to a consensus that this collusion was wrong. We're just going to ban it. We're just going to make it illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we need to come to that same conclusion, have that same attitude toward businesses colluding to fix what you can hear and not hear. Mm-hmm. Maybe they should be able to, we should be able to sue them for that too. Well, that seems more important, even more important, because that's that determines the whole political process. And the economics is just a subset of that. They can control who rules us.
So, and base it all on fraud, you know, determine who's allowed to speak, who is not, what opinions are allowed, what opinions are not.
Yeah, is this a conspiracy to take power? It sounds like you can almost call it a coup. Conspiracy to make money is worse than a conspiracy to take power over the whole land? Well, anyway, something to think about. Free speech and diversity are incompatible. This brings it back to race, too, which is what we're really concerned about. One thing you can say is anything governments require you to believe is a lie. Anything governments require you to disbelieve is probably true. You know, there's different variations of that.
Yeah, that kind of goes with the whole pronoun thing, where they're going to require you to pretend, you know. Mm. To go along with
their delusion.
Hey, with that delusion, they're going to require you to, they're forcing you to ignore biological realities under criminal threat.
Anything like also the believing in that diversity is our strength, you know, and clearly it is not.
Yeah. And this talking point, you're not trying to prove anything right or wrong. You're not trying to argue that this or that is true, or this or that did or didn't happen, or you're calling into question, you know, their claims of what's true and isn't true. Well, if it's true, why do you got to force everybody to believe it?
And not allow any questioning of it.
Yeah, why can't you allow any discussion of it? Any election you're required to accept probably has something wrong with it. Something is wrong with any proposition that has to be protected by law. You can't shout fire in a crowded theater, but what if there is a fire? This is the standard, I guess, the Supreme Court came up with at one point. But it ignores the fact, well, what if there is a fire? What if, in other words, can you say what's true?
What if you can prove there's a fire in the theater? You know, that's the whole thing with white genocide. They want it shut down, and, you know, for that reason, but we can actually prove that it's true, that it's happening. They just want to shut down any discussion of it. So that's pretty much the underlying point, is that if they can stop us from talking about it, then they can continue on with it. Yeah, that does seem to be the standard talking point, the fire in the crowded theater. And it normally would be kind of a valid point, but like you said, what if there is a fire? It might be different if we were shouting about a white genocide when it's not happening at all, but it is happening and everybody can see it with their own two eyes. And the fact that we're being told that we're not allowed to talk about that only lends credence to our accusation that it is genocide.
Yeah, what are we inciting? We're inciting people to see reality as it is, I guess. Why is that bad? How can that ever be bad?
Because they take it as hate of non-whites. Just because we love our race, it means we hate others.
Yeah, it's an absurd allegation. It's like saying that the Native Americans hated everyone who wasn't Native because they didn't like what was happening with colonialism, or the settlers. It's an absurd accusation to make, and you can show how absurd it is when you flip the script. Like, do Tibetans hate everyone who's non-Tibetan because they don't like Tibetan genocide? Is that how it works?
Yeah.
This just another one of the endless double standards against whites.
A slave could say anything he wanted as long as it didn't offend his master. By leftist standards, every slave had freedom of speech, because we can say anything we want as long as we don't offend political correctness. Mm-hmm. One response to incitement is humans are responsible, animals are incited. You know, they just assume that only white people have any self-control or are responsible for their actions again.
Well, that's it. Because, you know, like you said before, anything could incite you. You could say, oh, the way you brushed your hair, you know, incited me to to do this crime. Well, that's how absurd. You know, my actions shouldn't be responsible for your actions.
It's not that we're telling anybody to engage in any violent act.
No, the only time we ever talk about violence really is when we're denouncing it. The solution to this is not violence. Solution is for white people to be allowed to have open, honest, and fair discussions about it without being slandered, libeled, demonized, thrown in jail, and all the other things that happen to anybody who points out the policies that are forcing whites into destruction in Europe and America and other places. And the other thing about this is that they go around, like, I recently posted a video of Nancy Pelosi talking about how absurd the idea of white genocide is. Okay, well, if it's so absurd, why can't we talk about it? Why do you have to hold hearings every week?
I missed that.
How to censor us?
She really said she used the terms white genocide.
She used the term great replacement, but I mean that's the code word for white genocide.
Yeah.
That's a whole different subject. But the idea that the media, at first they were calling it white genocide, then they said, wait a minute, we need to stop doing that because we're bringing attention to the crime being committed.
Yeah, right.
So we need to find a softer, a nerf term for it, and great replacement fit that bill.
Yeah.
Where they're not mentioning the term genocide. So
yeah. The fact that leftists prefer replacement to genocide.
Yes.
What does that tell you?
Right. That alone should be telling other pro-whites that get away from terms like great replacement or erasure. Start using the legal term, the accusation. Start making an accusation of them. At the very least, accusation of human rights violations, which there are numerous that they are guilty of. But most importantly, the crime of genocide. The left don't want you to use that term because that term brings attention to a crime that they are obviously guilty of, or anti-whites in general. So that's exactly why you should be using the term.
Yeah, because they don't like it. I compared it to the Brer Rabbit. He says, don't throw me in the Briar Patch, of course, because he wants you to throw him in the Briar Patch. And Nancy Pelosi says, don't say replacement, because she wants you to say replacement. She'd rather have you say replacement than genocide.
And that's, one of the closing points here that we had is that freedom, free speech doesn't do you any good if you don't have good talking points. And that's exactly what, and using the correct terminology in the talking points is what is most effective. And that is, as Jeff said, is our
value added.
Value added. That was the word. Yes. And that's it. We want to make it easy for people to be able to take down these anti-whites and take on the system. And talking points is the way to do it. Consistent messaging.
Yeah, we don't just talk about this stuff and whine about it and say how horrible it is. We try to give you some ammunition to fight back. And right now it's propaganda war. You fight propaganda or with talking points. Yep. Hopefully we're giving you some here that you can use, pick up, repeat, exercise power. Don't just whine. Don't act, just complain. Don't just exercise futility, exercise power.
Yeah.
Pretty much all the talking points can be found in the mantra. If you just memorize the mantra, read the mantra, understand it fully, it's all there. Like, this is only happening to white countries. Only whites are being subjected to it. Only white people are called racist or supremacist or whatever, because if we argue in favor of our own interests and our own self-determination, self-preservation, we're the only race that is being subjected to this.
And if it was happening to any other race, what kind of psycho, wouldn't object to it if it was happening to his race?
Right.
Yeah. And everything they complain about white people doing, every race is done, if not more. I call that the cherry picking fallacy, because if that's a crime, everyone's guilty.
Yeah.
They say whites are evil for, they're not wrong in saying that whites did this or that, but so did everybody else. They're wrong. They're lying in saying that whites are uniquely evil or uniquely bad or uniquely guilty of these things. They're not.
it's lying by omission. And that's kind of what the argument of the CRT thing is that that textbooks are lying by omission. Not necessarily that what's being said in the textbooks is wrong on some issues, but a lot of times it is totally wrong. Sometimes it's just totally false. But rather that they're singling out white people and demoralizing white kids and instilling white guilt into white kids for things that all races are just as guilty of.
Are there legitimate restrictions on free speech? I mean, or what is your standard? I mean, for deciding what is and isn't. The leftists say, well, anything that offends political correctness needs to be censored, or you can't say. My standard is it's true or not. If it's true, you should be able to say it. You shouldn't be punished in any way for it. And this goes way back in American law to the Zenger case, where the jury said a guy named Zenger, Peter Zenger, was charged with libel for saying true things about the governor or some big shot. And a jury acquitted him. He said, no, as long as what he said is true, truth cannot be libelous.
Is that true in today's justice system, though? Because I always thought like libel slander was if you actually had reason for to believe that something was true, you could say it. And it's not
if it's your honest opinion. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, they were trying to use the standard. Well, anything bad you say about somebody is libel. But what if it's true?
Yeah. I mean, that's the way the justice system should work.
But the other side of that is if you do libel somebody, if you do lie about them, should you be allowed to do that? Is that free speech? I mean, we don't allow people to engage in economic fraud.
I mean, apparently it is, because they can lie about us. They can call us and say whatever they want. Call us any slanderous name, totally untrue, and not face any repercussions over it.
There's a 1964 Supreme Court case, New York Times versus Sullivan. They raised the bar for the standard for suing somebody for libel. In a unanimous opinion authored by Justice Brennan, the court ruled for the Times. When a statement concerns a public figure, the court held, it is not enough to show that it is false for the press to be liable for libel. Instead, the target of the statement must show that it was made with knowledge of or reckless disregard for its falsity. Brennan used the term actual malice to summarize this standard. Okay, so they raised the bar to be able to sue for a public figure to be able to sue somebody that lied about them. They have to prove that they had reckless disregard and actual malice. And that's a very high standard, and it's very hard to do. So it essentially allows the press to lie about people. And this, I say that this Supreme Court case was a fundamental shift in power toward liars and toward propagandists and against, the people elected these public figures. So you're nullifying their vote, essentially, if you're allowed to lie about them with impunity. The Supreme Court has defined public figures as those who hold government office and those who have achieved a role of special prominence in the affairs of society by reason of notoriety of their achievements or vigor and success with which they seek public's attention. Okay, so that's a public figure. So anyone that matters, basically. So I guess I say the standard should be whether it's true or false. Not to say the standard, whether it's...
But... Yeah, I mean, that we're talking censorship here. Should somebody be censored for being wrong? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
or
I don't think they should.
For lying.
Yeah. But that's setting the bar kind of high. Because when you're accusing somebody of lying,
it's got to be framed a different way than maybe you should ask it as questions. questioning it rather than straight out coming and stating something, you know, this is how it was, these are crisis actors, you know.
See, I mean, when you're accusing somebody of lying, you're accusing them of intent, you know what I mean? Like, and being wrong is different than lying. And mm-hmm. so you'd have to prove intent. And how do you do that and censor? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's too quick. So I don't know about that. I don't know about your standard. If you could always determine intent behind what somebody is saying, then sure, yes.
Well, I came up with this concept of political fraud. That's where you're lying to get for political gain. And why shouldn't that be a crime? But if you're just lying for and there's no damages, there's no effect of it, nobody believes you, okay, fine, that's one thing. But if you're lying to try to gain power, that's something else.
Yeah.
If you lie to gain money, that's a crime. Why shouldn't be lying about to gain power be a crime? Or at least be actionable in civil court. So right now we got a situation where the leftists can say whatever they want, get away with it, and we can't say anything.
And they just, leftist experts can totally lie and then claim that, oh, I'm just incompetent. It's strange how people can go from, like, these anti-racist, quote-unquote, anti-white experts can go from an expert to an incompetent idiot, a self-proclaimed incompetent idiot from, you know, one second to the next when they're wrong about things. Kind of like how Dirk Moses was an expert on genocide and white genocide until all of a sudden he's in a conversation with us and he's no longer an expert. He's basically essentially saying he was incompetent in his research. Defining what white genocide is. You know what I mean? Like, they will flip back and forth between this being an expert and an idiot. And you're just supposed to allow it to happen without saying that.
Just so you can't pin them down on anything?
Basically, yes. Yeah. And you see it with anti-racists in general that we will come in contact with. One second they're an expert. Like, for example, you know, the whole idea, okay, one minute they're like white people colonized and enslaved and white people, there's a white supremacist system and all this. And then the next minute we have them saying, what's a white person? I don't understand how they go from expert to an idiot, self-proclaimed idiot. And even the Dirk Moses types do this. It's not just the low-level anti-racist out there. It's the academic, the anti-white academics that do this exact same thing.
Yeah, you just got to keep rubbing their noses in it and point out, well, so when you're talking about, white supremacy and white privilege, what were you talking about? You seem to know what white people were then.
Oh, it's funny on Twitter, because I'll do that all the time. You'll have a guy, what's a white person? What's a white country? And then I'll just do a search on Twitter. And by the way, Elon, if you're listening here, you need to fix your Twitter search. It sucks. It needs to be easier. But I'll go through, search through their profile for the term white and start pulling up just massive amounts of them talking about white people, white countries. And I'm like, well, who are the white people you're talking about in this post here? And then I'll post it along with them. And it's like I said, they all do it. They all go from racism expert to total moron in 0 to 10 seconds flat. Like, well, from one post to the next, they're expert in one and then idiot, self-proclaimed idiot in the next post.
And how about if you agree with Black Lives Matter, how do you tell who's black? Or how do
you define black?
Yeah, well, what are they talking about?
Yeah, I've never heard any of these people. Black, what do you mean? Black Lives Matter. I don't see race. I don't understand this whole race thing. I've never heard any anti-racist say it to them.
Mm. Yeah, it's like the one.
Do you correct them and say, yeah, well, actually, there's no such thing as race. So you should stop saying Black Lives Matter. Yeah. Never heard him say that. Yeah.
Never. Not once. I mean, that's the whole scam here. Is they're experts one second, and then self-proclaimed idiots next.
When they talk about all these excuses for censorship, we have to keep in mind that all freedoms have risks. That's true. We can't try to prove that they don't.
That's true. I'd agree with that.
There's no such thing as a harmless freedom.